Hi, I'm Tim, and welcome back to the Tim Masso Podcast. It's been a while since we've sat down one-on-one without a guest, and that's not to say we won't have them. We have quite a few coming up, but today I thought I would discuss something deeply personal, my preference in Ulysse Nordin watches. We don't necessarily need an interloper between you and me to discuss my personal wish list from one of the most innovative brands in Swiss horology. I will give you a preview, however, of guests to come. Make no mistake, we're going to have some cool interviews. We're going to do a Watch and Wheels podcast with our good friend Drew Koblitz, who is coming back from several weeks podcasting in his own right and driving Singer Porsches out in California. He's coming back to pick up some Lamborghinis in Philly before he heads out to the Monterey Historics. We're going to catch him in between, ask him about his possible return to the racing circuit and his car and watch collecting since we filmed our spot with him for the YouTube channel last summer. We're also going to be speaking to one of the deans of modern American watchmakers, watch and clock master craftsman, David Walter. He's going to be talking to us about his recent work, most prominently in the watch segment, where he finds himself doing more of his work today. So we're going to talk to him about watchmaking and clockmaking today. And we're going to speak to one of his proteges, a man who helped to revive guilloche and the art of guilloche in America, Josh Shapiro of J.N. Shapiro Watches. Of course, you've probably seen his lovely Roger Smith and Breguet-inspired guilloche work on watches of his own manufacture. So he is going to be with us on the show, and we're going to speak with Mauro Egremini, the CEO of Schwarz-Etienne, which is a wonderful manufacturer that has been overlooked for years, but recently resurfaced on collector radar thanks to a spectacular collaboration with Kari Voutilainen. You might have seen the Roma Synergy model, including on my social media. Definitely check out my review of that on Watchbox Reviews. But we're going to be speaking tomorrow about Schwarz-Etienne, which is an impressive manufacturer making everything from hairspring to tourbillon in-house. We're going to talk about the present, the Voutilainen collaboration, and the future. All of that will be coming up in the next few weeks on the Tim Masso Podcast. So today I'm going to speak about my favorite Ulysse Nordin watches. We've got a list of my all-time faves and then a couple of near misses that I think are worth following up if you are in the luxury watch space, you have a little bit of a free spirit, and you're willing to get involved in a brand that's not Rolex, Patek, F.P. Journe, or Audemars Piguet. Ulysse Nordin is truly special. Rescued basically from the scrap heap in 1983 by Rolf Schneider, the company's history goes back to 1846 and was founded by Ulysse Nordin himself. The company became famous during the 19th century through the mid-20th century for its marine chronometers, its navigation clocks, and through the late 19th century and early 20th century, it won many chronometry awards at global expositions. So it was well known for precision, high-grade products, and particularly in the realm of navigation, it was considered a standard of reference. By 1983, the company was, although still around, a shadow of itself. For the most part, it was assembling marine chronometers from old parts and performing service and rebuilds on its older chronometers, which were actually used for navigation through the 80s. So while it was not a growth industry at the point Schneider bought the company, it was not quite past tense. It was still very much alive, albeit on a much reduced scale. And if you do have a modern Ulysse Nordin marine chronometer from the 50s, 60s, 70s, you can still send it in for service. And I've even been told that they will service their chronometers from the early 20th century back to the 1800s. So if you need the parts, they can actually make them in-house. UN still supports its older stuff, but we're talking about modern watches today. And although UN's modern watches do start in the 80s with the spectacular Trilogy of Time, more on that a little bit later, my list of favorite UN watches actually starts in 2001, 20 years ago, with the first Ulysse Nordin Freak. The Freak was born as a concept by later Cartier watch chief Carol Forestio Casapi. She won a contest with a watch that was basically a movement surrounded by a peripheral mainspring. And this idea, adopted by Ulysse Nordin, became the root of the Freak. But the Freak really sits at the root of a family tree with many different branches. You think about the tourbillon overload of the 2000s. Well, The Freak was right at the beginning of that. It was influential in that regard. You think about the use of silicon in the industry. Well, The Freak included a silicon escapement. Back when no one was doing that, Ulysse Nordin worked with a company called Sigatech to develop silicon for a watchmaking application. And that was the first mechanical use of silicon in a wristwatch. During the 2000s, we saw an explosion of watches with essentially open dials revealing the mechanism beneath, but The Freak was well ahead of that, as The Freak brought the entire movement to the dial side. The baguette movement was the entirety of the mechanism, save only the mainspring on the caseback, so the dial side visible movement got a big boost from The Freak. And let's not forget that The Freak used a double direct impulse escapement in its initial variant, meaning it was way ahead of the likes of Laurent Ferrier, Carrie Voutilainen, and F.P. Journe in that regard. A double direct impulse Breguet-inspired escapement, albeit in silicon, by Ulysse Nordin, a small independent that at the time was barely making 10,000 watches a year, and most of them with ETA calibers. It was incredibly ambitious. The other reason why the first Freak is still my favorite is because it's the most wearable. The first Freak was a 42.5. Later Freaks would grow progressively larger, and none of them were ever quite as well fit to my wrist, which is 16 centimeters, as the original 2001 watch. So from an aesthetic standpoint, it was singular. From an engineering standpoint, it was innovative, influential, and pioneering. And of course, from an ergonomic standpoint, if you are like me and you love the Freak and you've got a smaller wrist, it's pretty much got to be the first model, unless you fast forward nearly to the present day and the last two or three years with the arrival of titanium models and carbon fiber models, which are a little bit more wearable. So the Freak for me will always be an all-timer. You could get the watch in rose gold, you could get the watch in white gold, and the price range is surprisingly reasonable. Most of them, Freak ones, are going to sell for between $40,000 and $55,000 if you go out on Chrono 24. Now, if you find one that's completely untouched, full box papers, original bill of sale, crazy degree of originality and accessorization, and it's never been upgraded from its Freak 1 escape wheels, and you're going to have to look for this. They have a different profile than the 1.5, but if it still has its original Freak 1 escape wheels and everything else is immaculate, museum quality, you could be looking at a $70,000 to $75,000 Freak 1. Fast forward to 2003, and it was 2003 when we saw the 500-piece Ulysse Nordin Aqua Perpetual. Now, the Aqua Perpetual drew on the perpetual calendar technology created by Ludwig Oxlin. In 1996, he created a bidirectional perpetual calendar that was dubbed the Perpetual Ludwig. It could be set in either direction, and unlike every other perpetual calendar in the industry, which would be destroyed if you even attempted to set them backwards, most of them didn't even have a means to drive backwards, well, this was a very durable system that was hard to break, and being adjustable bidirectionally, it was the first perpetual calendar system not included in a clock that was compliant in the year 2100, when every other Gregorian calendar perpetual will have to go back to the factory to be reset. The UN can be set backwards, and bidirectionally, meaning you can adjust it at home without sending it back to Leloc. Now, Ludwig Oxlin had originally aspired to be a physicist. He decided science wasn't his true calling, and he actually went to the Vatican to restore clocks. He started out as a clock restorer, eventually got into clock restoration at the Vatican, where he experienced super high-end medieval and late Renaissance celestial complications, principally used to calculate the vernal equinox and the start of Easter. So he gained access to calendar systems, the likes of which wristwatch engineers had never experienced, and he brought that into the world of wristwatches with the Perpetual Ludwig in 1996. Of course, his Trilogy of Time also incorporated this information that he gathered in this learning, but on a much higher level. We're talking about the perpetuals here. We're fast forwarding to the 500-piece Aqua Perpetual Limited Edition, which I believe was a 2003, but might have been a 2004 model year. And this was a fascinating watch because it was a perpetual calendar dive watch, one of the first ever created. Now, the idea here in this 42.7 millimeter steel limited edition diver was that you had a dive watch built for the way most of us wear our dive watches, which is to say high and dry. Most of us just wear our divers in everyday life. So the perpetual calendar system, which would be of no use diving on a wreck or a reef, is exceedingly practical in the office, which is, full disclosure, where I have worn my dive watches, with the exception of my Navy swim tests. So the perpetual calendar and dive watch made a lot of sense, but there was more. Flinke lacquer, so a guilloche dial and a guilloche pattern bezel with a translucent blue lacquer on top. So Flinke enamel is guilloche with enamel translucent on top. This was Flinke lacquer with lacquer over a guilloche pattern, and it was beautiful. And these watches are wonderfully accessible today, among the most affordable perpetual calendars you'll find, because they are in stainless steel. You're going to be looking at about $11,000 to $13,000 to get your hands on one of the Aqua Perpetuals. And I think that these are among the most attractive divers going, never mind the perpetual calendar system, never mind the chronometer certification that the watch has. I think these are just amongst the best looking dive watches ever made. And on that basis alone, the romantic basis, not the intellectual, but the feeling that the heart gets from the sensation of the eye, this is a watch that I would love to have on my wrist. The El Toro. The 1999 GMT Perpetual, it was the GMT Plus Minus Perpetual. It took the 1994 Plus Minus GMT system that Oxlin had developed, and it combined it with the Perpetual Ludwig of 1996 to create the GMT Plus Minus Perpetual, a GMT with a perpetual calendar. And for me, the best version of this system was the 2010 El Toro GMT Plus Minus Perpetual. You get it in rose gold, you could get it in platinum. Both had ceramic bezels to resist scratching, 43 millimeters and 100 meters water resistant. This was a $65,000 watch in platinum, 500-piece limited edition that today you can get for $23,000. You're getting the bi-directional GMT plus minus system, which has a 12-hour time you can adjust with the pushers. So if you're jumping time zones, it's very quick and predictable and practical. And then it has a 24-hour secondary time zone. It's also a certified chronometer with a highly modified Lamagna base that has effectively become a Ulysse Nardin manufacturer caliber. It is robustly lumed, automatic, and again, water resistant. So it is a true high horology sports watch, beautifully made front and back with lovely Côte de Genève on the dial and fired blued screws fixing the perpetual calendar into place over the dial base. Of course, it has that bidirectional perpetual calendar, which includes both a year and a decade, not just the day, date, month, and leap year cycle. And once again, bidirectionally settable. Get it on the rubber strap. It was available on leather, but I feel that a water-resistant sports watch deserves the OEM black or brown rubber strap, depending on whether you're getting platinum or the rose gold model, and then it has a full clasp. On a sports watch, UN could have given us a pin buckle, but they give you a full clasp. So to me, they're not shorting you the precious metal. Now, the El Toro is a big piece, and it's got a bold look. Like most UN watches, it's not designed to be anonymous, and it's designed to be love or hate, like the original Dodge Viper, something that inflames passions both for and against. I happen to adore it. If you want a more conventional take on the Ludwig Oxlin GMT Plus Minus Perpetual, I recommend the beautifully sized 38.5mm 1999 dress watch version of the mechanism. 2008, the Sonata Silesium. The original Sonata arrived in 2003, and I can say without reservation, it is the minute repeater of alarm watches. Long before Breguet and Harry Winston and Patek Philippe were using repeater governors and repeater-style gongs on alarm watches, Ulysse Nardin used a centrifugal governor, just like a minute repeater, with minute repeater gongs and black polished strikers on the Sonata. The Sonata is a wonderful alarm in that it can be set in 24-hour format, so it knows the difference between 2 a.m. and 2 p.m., but it also features a countdown format. If you prefer to think of your alarm in terms of a 2-hour countdown rather than an alarm that will go off 2 hours from now, if now is 2 and that is 4, then that's in 2 hours from now, just set it for a 2-hour countdown and it's easier to understand. So you get those two setting modes, and you get an on-off switch, which not every alarm has. The Sonata is also able to tell you a second time zone, which is simply invaluable, as oftentimes when you need an alarm, what you really need is both a second time zone and an alarm to keep track of your affairs, both where you are and where you are not. Now, of course, it uses a heavily modified LaMagna base, as most Ulysse Nardin automatic watches of the 2000s did, a truly special timepiece. It has over 100 jewels. So if you're wondering, is this a UN movement? I have to say without reservation, yes, it is. It is a UN movement. Yes, it has a LaMagna base, but UN has done so much to this basic movement that, as with the Destrero Scifusia of IWC, a grand complication with a 7750 base, this is a watch that has to be considered all Ulysse Nardin. Now, in 2008, they upgraded the Sonata, which now includes cathedral gongs, like the grandest of minute repeaters. A cathedral gong is not one ring around the movement, it's one and a half, so there's more gong surface area. The Silicium added a number of innovations dealing with Ulysse Nardin's adoption of silicon, having purchased their silicon collaborator, Sigatech, in 2006. By the time the Silicium arrived in the Sonata catalog, UN was making its own silicon components. And so the Sonata Silicium features a lovely evacuated disc of silicon on its dial side, a silicon hairspring, a silicon escape wheel, a silicon anchor. So the entire Swiss lever movement has now been executed in unlubricated silicon, which improves precision and also improves precision in between services. And we have that anti-magnetic silicon hairspring on the dial side, underneath the silicon disc, exquisite Côte de Genève, and loomed for practicality. Of course, it's a unique Ulysse Nardin aesthetic, but I should add that UN is very distinctive. There are some watches that are as generic comes, whereas with UN, the brand has a strong character to it. As with Grubel Forcy, F.P. Journe, De Béthune, Voutelainen, Dufour, you know at a glance what you're looking at. It has that strong design language that is consistent from era to era, such that every UN watch, even from 10, 20, almost 30 years ago, is recognizable as a UN watch, and I love that. The Sonata Silicium, one of many Sonata models, you may find your favorite. There's the Sonata Streamline, which is a little bit more sporty. There is the Sonata Classic, which is a stripped-down version of the watch. There are many versions, and you will find one you like. The Sonata Silicium came alternately in 300 pieces in white gold, 300 pieces in rose gold, and you can typically find them, if you look carefully, in the high $20,000 range. They are definitely out there. There are bargains to be had. Now, I should also mention that Ulysse Nardin has built some simple watches that are worthy of your attention, and my favorite is the modern-day Classico series with enamel dial. So the Classico today, a basic 40mm chronometer-certified automatic watch that has an enamel dial built by Ulysse Nardin's in-house enamel dial collaborator, Danze Cadrin. From the 1990s, actually from the late 80s through the present day, Danze Cadrin, which is a specialist in enamel dials, has supplied Ulysse Nardin with enamel dials. Some have been conventional Grand Faux enamel. Some have been a combination of Grand Faux enamel with miniature painting and imagery, usually nautical imagery. And some have been exquisite cloisonné enamel with a gold dial base atop which wire frames are used to create the image of ships or Chinese zodiac animal figures or land masses, and these little cordon or cloison in wire are used to create the images that are then filled and surrounded with enamel and fired through the Grand Faux process at up to 800 degrees centigrade up to 20 times, and the result is a work of art that tells time that you can wear on your wrist and take with you. Now, during the 1990s, these watches were generally built under the San Marco collection, which means they were basic automatic watches, generally chronometer certified, with enamel dials. Today, if you're going to buy one of these watches dating back the last 10 years, they will be in the Ulysse Nardin Classical Collection. So search for Ulysse Nardin Enamel, Ulysse Nardin Zodiac, Ulysse Nardin Nautical Enamel, Ulysse Nardin Ships, Ulysse Nardin Classico, and you'll be able to find them on eBay, on Google, on Chrono 24 if you want to get a sense. They go from anywhere between $25,000 for particularly desirable Chinese Zodiac variants with full box papers and bill of sale to under $10,000 for some of the less involved variants. And that doesn't mean the condition is bad or the watch is unattractive, just that if you want a simple white Grand Faux enamel dial in a 40 millimeter rose gold watch with a chronometer certification, you can get that used in the Classical Collection if you look for under $10,000. So we're talking less money than people are currently spending on machine-made 41 millimeter Rolex Oyster Perpetuals. You can have a handmade chronometer certified enamel dial Ulysse Nardin from one of the quirkiest and most lovable and beloved brands in the industry. I am a huge fan of the Classico. And I think if you're going to build a Ulysse Nardin collection, you need to have one of their classic watches. You need to have either the 1996 Marine, which was the first modern Marine wristwatch. It was a special anniversary piece to celebrate 150 years of Ulysse Nardin. It's only 36 millimeters, so it's a lot more compact than the Marines that came after, and they are beautifully detailed. That or one of the simple San Marco enamel dial models from the 2000s, one of the more recent vintage diver re-editions, or one of the Classico models. I think if you're going to have a UN collection, a simple watch is necessary because UN has done many simple watches that are beautifully subtle, and it shows the range of the brand that can do something crazy like the Moonstruck Celestial Complication, which is huge and intricate and complex, but they can also do those gorgeous watches that are as beautifully poetic in their simplicity as something like a Philippe Dufour or an F.P. Journe Chronomètre Bleu. Ulysse Nardin has done watches like that, and it shows the range of the brand. Now, some UN watches that I love that didn't make the list, and they're all great pieces. And we're going to start with the Trilogy of Time. Now, starting from the late 80s, Ludwig Oxlin started to unpack everything he understood about celestial complications from his clock days into a wristwatch format. And so he had a Celestial Complication Trilogy, all of them powered by ETA bases. The watches were the Astrolabium, the Tellarium, and the Planetarium. So you had the Tellarium, Johann Kepler, the Astrolabium, Galileo Galilei, and then the Planetarium, Copernicus. These watches variously told you the positions of the planets, the schedule of the tides, the height of the stars in the sky. They were basically recreations of celestial models that you could wear on your wrist. Now, I like these watches, which range from 40 to 43 millimeters, but whether you're going with the Tellarium, the Astrolabium, or the Planetarium, they are incredibly abstruse, difficult to keep set because of the short power reserve of their ETA base calibers, and a little bit difficult to read. They're highly academic, and while artisanal and exquisite, I find that I don't enjoy wearing them as much as I enjoy some of the other UN watches, primarily because they are so cerebral. I don't think that they're emotional enough to appeal to me, and I'm more of an emotionally driven collector. As much as I love the idea of being able to calculate the start of Easter using a watch on my wrist, I'm never going to need it or want it. Now, other watches that are great. I would say that the Marine Annual Calendar is a lovely piece. It was released in the early 2000s. I believe 2004 was the first year, and it uses a ETA base with a Dubois de Praz Annual Calendar Chronograph module. And if you look at that module, it's the same Annual Calendar Chronograph module used on the Richard Mille RM11. So there is tremendous value here. I mean, really great value in a 100 meter water resistant watch that's automatic winding, beautifully sized in steel at 40 millimeters that gives you an annual calendar and a chronograph. It's a lot for the money. I frequently see these for less than $5,000. And what a way to get into a great brand as well as value and complication. I will also say the Marine Tourbillon Bleu Grand Feu. This is a lovely piece, and I really can't get over it, but it came out a few years ago, and at $28,000 when it debuted in late 2017, I was basically shocked by this thing. We are talking 43 millimeters, stainless steel, a flying tourbillon, a silicon escapement, a silicon hairspring, a free-sprung balance, a power reserve indicator, and Grand Feu Flinqué enamel in a 100-meter water-resistant steel watch. All of this, think about this, for $28,000 new, with a warranty. Now, the watch featured a caliber UN-128 with a 60-hour power reserve, and it was an automatic winder, which is unusual on tourbillon watches. The timepiece was gorgeous, and it highlighted everything Ulysse Nordin had learned over the years. The marine design, which is probably their most distinctive modern case and dial combination, taking their old marine chronometers and transposing them onto your wrist. Since 1996, there has always been a marine in the catalog. The dial, featuring the Danse Cadran enamel expertise, a gold dial base cut on a rose lathe into a rosette pattern, much like a Cartier. If you think of a Cartier drive to Cartier, a Cartier tank, a Cartier Santos, that is rosette guilloche, but this is real guilloche, not the stamped kind you see on the Cartier. And then a translucent Grand Feu blue enamel over that guilloche base. You then add the silicon technology from Sigatech. And with the silicon technology from Sigatech, you get resistance to magnetism, you get improved power reserve, you get improved precision. All of the benefits of adding silicon. UN is not dependent on other groups for silicon. Remember, most of the silicon technology for hairsprings and escapements, but especially for hairsprings, which is exceptionally exclusive, the hairspring was a triple monopoly of Patek Philippe and of Rolex, and of Swatch Group. Everyone else has to buy silicon hairsprings from them, but UN makes its own. And you get that in the Marine Tourbillon Grand Feu. Now, I will also say that if you've got unlimited budget, the 2019 Mega Yacht was very cool. $310,000. This thing was an absolute monster. A 30-piece limited edition. It was difficult to describe this watch, and I'm going to do my best, but it is difficult to describe this watch. It was launched during the Miami Boat Show in early 2019, and that was running in parallel with Watches and Wonders Miami. So you start with a blue enamel dial. So it's blue enamel over a white gold dial base. The watch sits inside a 44-millimeter platinum case. So you've got a 44-millimeter hockey puck of platinum on your wrist, and there's only going to be 30 of them. There is an anchor with chain that is drawn along a scale on the dial, and this anchor chain indicates the power reserve. The watch features a flying tourbillon in the shape of a propeller. So you've got a flying tourbillon in the shape of a propeller on the dial side of this watch. You also have a full spherical moon phase. So you have a moon phase that is actually a sphere, and you get the moon phase, and you get the age of the moon, but you also get an indicator of tidal coefficients and volumes. This thing is absolutely bonkers, and it was a collaboration between Ulysse Nordin and its neighbor in Loloque, Christophe Claret. Truly special and artisanal between the enamel and the manual finishing of the movement, which is finished to excruciating detail. It is like nothing else in the world, and it is very Ulysse Nordin, as it takes their expertise in celestial complications, tidal complications, silicon technology, enamel, and of course calendars, and it brings it all together into one megawatch. A mega watch for a mega yacht. It's not on my list of favorites, but it might be on yours. It is an endearing and lovable thing, and not every egomaniac power watch is that. Throw it all together. The watch has 53 jewels and an 80-hour power reserve, which is always impressive for a tourbillon, much less a tourbillon that has secondary functions attached. Thanks to all of you. Remember, you can reach out to me at mondaymailbag@thewatchbox.com and suggest podcast topics. Thanks so much to all. Thanks to Carlos, who helps me maintain these podcasts, and my colleague Brandon Wood, who helps me with my scheduling. Time out, Tim out, and thanks for logging on.